There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 911, November 8th. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. I say Max Factor puts on Pancho Villa performance for regime change. Viva Revolucion, viva Mexico. Back to you, LAF.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Max celebrates with a Mercedes Piñata. Toto, not so happy with Bottas. Checo, he's just happy. And just a reminder, the Velocity Invitational is this weekend from the 11th to the 14th of November at Laguna Seca in beautiful Monterey. And just a reminder, we need your contributions. Keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, I'm very excited about the Mercedes Piñata. That was very, very interesting. And, sir, before we go any further, I would like to give a shout-out to one of our original listeners, Mr. Gabriel Rosenketter. And looks like he and his buddy, Monsieur Rudolf Boulanger, are still members of the F1 Weekly Familia, so which was very nice. We were texting each other, like Pedro de la Rosa and Machismo during the Grand Prix. And Gabriel tells me he met you at the U.S. Grand Prix I think it was the inaugural U.S. Grand Prix in Tejas.
That is correct. Me and Gabriel bonded. And I'm telling you, Gabriel has the hot women because his girlfriend was ha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha, Jimmy Durante style. So very impressive. We had a great time. And a shout out to Gabriel indeed. He is one of the original F1 Weekly family members and has been contributing monthly for years and years and years. So we thank him from the bottom of our pocketbook.
That is very good. Very good. So, sir, how is Mr. Wolf doing?
Well, sir, the host is excited. Now he's learning Dutch and realizing that Fernando is over, and Max is now the happening dude. When he passed those two Mercedes, giggling and snickering with his late braking maneuver, it was awesome. He proved to everybody, yes, he is number one. Number two is in number two. Number three is in number three. And everything is all as well in the world of motorsports. So it was wonderful. We have a new world champion in a few moments. But yes, Max is definitely, I think he's thrown down the gauntlet.
That he has. And you know, it's a very exciting weekend. Tables were turned in qualifying by Mercedes. And in the race, they were put right side up by the Dutch Gordon Ramsay. And Max wasted no time in delivering a full enchilada to Mercedes drivers in the run-up to the first corner. And man, I'm telling you, the onboard shot from Bottas' car was beautiful. The Red Bull flying by to grab the lead. And then poor wingman got his wings clipped, spinning the pole sitter. And that was all she wrote. But then, you know, last lap sprint gave him the fastest lap. And the luck that Bottas is having, you know, he did not even get a point for that because you have to be in the points, top 10, to get the point for the fastest lap. But looks like it's not over till it's over, but looks like the halcyon days of on-demand Hammer Time are over. And I'm sure you saw the faces of seven-time world champion and his illustrious team leader after the race. That said a lot.
Indeed, it did say a lot. A lot was said with very few words, but that frowning face looking down, looking low, 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 old man river. Yes, it was fascinating, but it is what it is. It's the changing of the guard. I haven't brought up the pendulum in a while, but certainly the pendulum has Red Bull spilt all over it.
But Mr. Rogers, I have to say, even in defeat, one thing was made very clear by Lewis. And that's why I like watching these great racing talents. He was able to hang on to second place, despite Checo being on fresher tires and on home soil. And despite deploying DRS, he was unable to make it a Red Bull 1-2. This went on for quite a few laps, proving once again that you need more than luck to win 7 championships and 100 Grand Prix wins. Did I make that very clear, sir?
Extremely clear, except for one little nuance, that he's still in a Mercedes, guys. This is not a Super Aguri. They locked out the front row. So he's still in the best car, as far as I'm concerned. But the problem is the Max factor. I think that's the problem.
Yes, yes. When you put that lipstick, even a pig will go very fast. It's simple as that. But you know, it's still too early for Max and Christian Horner to be singing, "Under My Thumb, the change has come." We still have 4 races to go, which means more than 100 points on the table. But this table is on shifting sands, and the last 3 races of the season are in places where there is no shortage of sand. I can see Lewis and Max splitting the last 4 races, and then the key to the championship will be a visit to the F1 Weekly DNF Chapel. If Max pays a visit to the DNF Chapel for whatever reason and give LCH an ounce of opportunity, he will pounce on it and get ahead of the 8 ball. It was not too long ago during this season Max had a 32-point lead, which then became a deficit, and again he's back in charge. So it's very exciting season going on. On the other hand, if LCH comes into the DNF Chapel or has an engine change penalty, there was a lot of talk of that before the Mexican Grand Prix. Now they are saying that they may not have to do an engine change. But if they have to do an engine change or some sort of a penalty, then his French will be fried. Deep Dutch fried.
The interesting part is if you come to America and somebody tells you or asks you what's the most dependable car in America, well, they don't say Chevrolet very much anymore. It's either Honda or Toyota. So, woo dogs! I'm telling you, one thing is for sure, when you buy a Mercedes, you're not buying it for dependability. You're buying it to be cool, to be hip, for the austere, for the machismo. And I love that, and I understand that. That's why I drive a Chevrolet.
Yes, that's very good, sir. Okay, sir, shall we take a quick look at quali?
Exciting quali. Mercedes was excited. Toto was happy. I even saw him reach down and scratch his testicle.
Oh, wow. Now, Q1 and into the wall of voodoo goes Lance Stroll, bringing out the red flag. Machismo was also out in Q1. And unfortunately, because I'm a big fan of Machismo, even though we, you know, talk about him quite a bit with a few zingers here and there, but it's looking like that his comeback is reflecting the comeback of the German Machismo going nowhere real fast. So, which is very sad, because this guy should be in a very fast car and reliable car too. At the end of Q2, LCH had a slim margin over Max, but Mercedes shocked the monkey and Max by grabbing their first front row lockout of the season since the Hungarian Grand Prix. Or as Christian Horner was complaining at that time, saying Max got Tsunoda'd. Yuki Tsunoda, referring to the junior Banzai racer going off course, and then which led Sergio Perez to go off as well. That was a very bizarre thing, you know. Yuki is a quick racer, but not a quick learner, unfortunately. I really had high, high hopes for him because, you know, I think last year in his rookie season in F2, I think he won more races than the guy who won the championship in his second year, and that was Mick Schumacher. So I know the guy has a lot of speed. But wise man DC has already suggested Yuki should call Thomas Cook and book a one-way ticket to Tokyo. The kid was fast-tracked to F1 in the finest Red Bull tradition. But with Honda departing after season finale in Abu Dhabi, I think his days are numbered 365 or less. And I will be very surprised if he can rattle the cage of Gasly in 2022. Amazingly, he was third fastest after Q2, behind only Max and pace setter, your favorite LCH. And once again in Q3, we had two cars from five teams, which is pretty interesting. Second pole from three races for Valtteri Bottas. He was the only driver who dipped below 1 minute 16 seconds. His pole time was 115.875. And pole was number 19 of his career, which I believe matches the pole numbers of René Arnoux, who, if I'm not mistaken, up till now had the distinction of most pole positions without a championship. Exactly not the record Wingman was planning to shoot down. But you know, René Arnoux had the same problem as Valtteri Bottas. The problem was the teammate. And René Arnoux, as you very well know at Renault, his teammate was Le Professeur. Toto was thrilled in the media pen after qualifying was over, and he said, and I quote, "To lock out the front row here in Mexico is a strong starting point for tomorrow's race. And it also shows the hard work that has gone into adapting our car and power unit to the changes of running at altitude." End of quote. Well, altitude meets Max's winning attitude, and we see what can happen. What say you, senor?
Oh, well, the fascinating thing is, don't get Max mad. If you get Max mad and deny him pole, he's just going to take it to you the following day, which he did. I mean, I'm impressed with this young man. Great decision making, great late braking. He's making Ricciardo an early breaker compared to Max. So an awesome, awesome, awesome display of superiority in driving skills alone. To be honest with you, I think if everybody was driving a Mercedes that day, we would have the same result. Because, like you said, it's attitude.
You see, senor. And you know, the tone of the race was set as soon as Max got side by side with Bottas. And I was hearing some body slamming or trading paint going into turn one, because they're, like Max said, there were three cars going into turn one. But then Max went like a torpedo that missed its target and went sailing into the distance. Poor Bottas, man, he cannot get a break. He was put into a spin, and it was first reported it was Checo, but then it was clarified left tap he received was from Danny Rick. Damage was done, and later in the race, and this was very, very bizarre, the two will meet again when Bottas tried to get into the points, but lap after lap, Danny Rick delivered second setback, and Bottas could not even enjoy getting into the top 10 or getting the point for the fastest lap. I was very surprised that he could not get ahead of Daniel Ricciardo. His fastest lap did prevent one extra point for Max and his hate-Ashbury free-loving team, all the love for one man, Red Bull. Did that surprise you that Danny Rick was able to keep him behind?
Well, Danny Rick is hard to pass. He's Mercedes-powered, and apparently the Mercedes is slowly evolving in Danny Rick's style of driving as of late. So Danny's happy, Norris not so happy, and Dan is really getting to grips with the McLaren. He's loving it. And the curse of the McLaren for Bottas happened twice. I mean, I think on his second pit stop, he came out and he was behind Rick again. So Sometimes when you eat the beans, you must accept the gas.
Oh boy, you're going very deep on philosophy today. That's good. Max, with his victory, has now become the most successful driver in Mexican Grand Prix. Or, you know, this was actually Mexico City Grand Prix with 3 wins. He was in total control throughout the race. And I think his only concern was when he asked his team to look at his front left tire, as he said, compared to other people. All he has to do now is bring the car home in remaining 4 races, and we will have a mega Dutch delight in Abu Dhabi. On paper, he should enjoy a winning Samba in Sao Paulo, and that will put Lewis in a trick bag to win remaining 3 races to get title number 8. And now, you know, all sorts of permutations are being run through, and I heard somebody say that if Max wins in Brazil, then all he has to do is finish second in the remaining 3 races, and he will be world champion. Lewis did win 3 of the first 4 races, and he has the talent still to win 3 of the last 4 races to retain his crown, which obviously would be a very, very historical event. And I will be equally happy if he wins or Max because of this. The question now is, does he have the package to deliver? But stranger things have happened in Formula One, Mr. Rogers. I never thought Seb would win the championship in 2010, but he did after leading the championship only one time after the season finale. In 2007, McLaren snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, and Lewis got the Isaac Hayes CD that weekend in Sao Paulo. Are we going to hear Mr. Hayes again in Yas Marina? What say you?
Nope, Mr. Hayes has been subdued and put on the bottom shelf of the record collection. So right now, Max is on a roll. But like I said, Hamilton in his old age, it's very interesting, but he keeps throwing out the word respect. And I think in the end, this is all going to turn out to be a loving and happy family. Max will get the championship, and Lewis will reflect on not breaking the Schumacher legacy of 7 world championships, but it could all be very, very interesting in retrospect. So I'm loving all of this. I think Max, the more you piss him off, the more he's going to win. Like you said, it's all coming down to reliability and these engines. So for the sake of the sport, I'm hoping that everybody could stay in the race with their motors till the end.
Yes. And you know, Hamilton still did a great job in denying second place to the second Red Bull. But being second in the race or the championship is not his agenda. But if he does not get number 8, you know, it's not over. He has signed for 2 more years, and next year the clock sets again. So what he will have is opportunity again. But we are definitely looking at Lewis Hamilton retiring with 110 or 115 Grand Prix wins, and that will be quite a statement. Now, after the race, Lewis said his teammate should have closed the door on Max. Well, easier said than done, as Sebastian Vettel found out at the same track against the same driver a few years ago. You can't stop a tsunami or a runaway Santa Fe, and that's how Max comes through. All good things come to an end sooner or later. I think Lewis and Toto see the writing on the wall. I do like the fact that between Max and Lewis, there is, what you just mentioned, still a lot of professional respect for each other, just as it was between Machismo and the rookie in their 1 year together at McLaren. So that's very good. The only thing I don't like, Mr. Rogers, about this season is one of these great drivers who have given us a lot of excitement and pleasure this year. In 4 races and in about 4 weeks, one of them will end up as the loser. But the show must go on. Would you like to say something about third man on the podium, local hombre Sergio Perez?
It was awesome. I mean, Perez, this is going to stay with him for the rest of his life. This was the most awesome Checo. Ole, 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 Checo. I mean, it was awesome. I've never seen, even when there was a French driver in France, I don't think they received this kind of reception. I was very impressed. Checo, you know, it was very memorable. I mean, it was family-like. It was awesome. And I was really happy for Checo. No matter what he did, he could not leave this Grand Prix unhappy.
Yeah, he becomes the first Mexican driver to be on the podium in his home race, and also the first local hombre to lead his home Grand Prix. It was very good to see his papa and peeps in joyful and colorful mood after the race. And this was third consecutive podium for Sergio. So I think they made the right decision. They finally found somebody who can run less than a second behind Max. So Sergio is doing a pretty bueno job. He did put a lot of pressure on Lewis in the closing stages, but what Red Bull really required in this race from him was to pass Lewis before the first pit stop. A Red Bull 1-2 would have really done serious damage to Mambo number 8. With all due respect to Checo and Bottas, it is so obvious their respective teammates cannot depend on them to provide tactical support when the battle is raging. One thing we do not want definitely is as Lewis and Max battle for the championship in the remaining races, we do not want somebody other than Max from the Red Bull camp, you know, they have three other cars, taking out Lewis or Bottas taking out Max. We want a clean fight and may the best driver win. So we'll see how it goes. One thing I will say, Mr. Rogers, tell me if you agree with me on this. If Kovalainen was driving car 44 or Kvyat was driving car number 33, I think the championship would have been decided at Monza or sooner. Do you concur?
I do concur, probably sooner. And it would have been a lot of laughs as well.
Absolutely. And this really goes to show, you know, how good both these drivers are. Okay, sir, now we move on to another guy who thinks he's very good. And he is. He's now a race winner, Pierre Gasly. Here is a racing talent and Grand Prix winner for whom Dr. Marco says, I can't seem to find your face in my mind. But he did a great job, given what he has, and Colli and race by finishing fourth. He may not be welcome again at Red Bull, but he's doing much better and still in Formula One compared to his fellow Francais Jean-Éric Vergne. You know, the interesting thing here is if Nando retires, which he really should because I don't see Alpine winning the championship next year, Pierre Gasly and Esteban Ocon are no longer friends, even though they grew up together. And I think Esteban's family, the first go-kart they bought for him was from Pierre Gasly's parent. They're in the same age group. But I would like to see Pierre Gasly get the Alpine seat. Hopefully they'll come up to speed in a few years. And he's already a proven race winner. So maybe he can salvage his career and at least get a few more wins, if not the championship. Now, the second Alfa Tauri of Yuki Tsunoda did not finish the race. It may not have been his fault, but he has been no match for Gasly, and I do not see that changing next season. Do you think Yuki Tsunoda, even though he has a lot of speed, that he will be able to rattle the cage of Gasly in 2022?
No, I don't see that. Gasly is extremely talented, well-grounded, and knows his capabilities. He's a man that knows his limitations, and Tsunoda does not. He's just sort of a young freaking Frankenstein. And Tsunoda is entertaining, but he doesn't have the mental capacity to put everything into place and focus on the job at hand. I think Tsunoda is having a great time. Apparently he likes food a lot, and I predict that Tsunoda will probably weigh about 300 pounds in a year or two.
Oh, who knows? Then he could be world sumo champion.
Exactly! Sumo champion of the world? Can you see Tsunoda in a diaper walking around? It's glorious.
That's what I dream of, Clark. Yuki Tsunoda in diapers, absolutely. Okay, sir, moving on. Charles Leclerc, the young man from Monaco, is regarded as one of the biggest talent on the grid. And his junior Formula career confirms that. But riding a prancing horse that cannot even gallop to a front row start, best he could do was fifth.
The joy of winning at Spa and Monza is a distant memory. His teammate, Carlos Sainz Jr., was behind him in sixth. Carlito is a big positive surprise of the season. For me, he's the most impressive driver this season. I really thought he would be lost in the fog of Ferrari politics, but Mini Machismo has stood the test of time very well, and from what I've read, that the team likes him very much, and I cannot wait to see him win a Grand Prix. You know, he will become the first Spaniard after Nando to win a Grand Prix, so that'll be very good. Sir, position 7, 8, 9. This was like an old glory freight train of Klondike gore now over the hill. Sebastian Vettel was 7th for Alfa Romeo. Must be wondering, where did number 5 go? Kimi Raikkonen was behind him in 8th. He was looking like a Chargers from his McLaren days, and that was good to see, even though he had some issues and was given a reprimand in qualifying. 9th was the cat, also known as Gato in Mexico, with 9 lives in all forms of motorsports, El Machismo de Matador. Final point from 10th was picked up by Lando Norris, the only McLaren scoring a point. And I would love to see McLaren get another win. That would be fantastic. I was hoping that Ferrari will get a win, but I don't think that's happening. After the race, the mood was very different. Total joy at Red Bull, with Perez and Papa being celebrated as the new world champion. It was very good to see such excitement from the fans. On the other side, the mood was somber and reality may be sinking in. I can hear Bono saying, "We are taking water," while Lewis summed up best by saying, "Just another race." On the start of the race, the wolf cried, and I quote, "That should not happen. I think we had 2 cars in front and seemed to open up the seal for Max to come around the outside. I don't think we could have won the race even if we would have stayed ahead in the first corner, because they could have driven circles around us, around the pit stops. So at the end, I think for Lewis's championship, it was damage limitation. As for the constructors, Valtteri spinning out turn 1 was just very painful," end of quote. And I heard somebody make a comment that Valtteri would rather see Max win the championship than Lewis. And the other day, you know, Nico Rosberg, because you know, when you talk to drivers, they do their PC talk, how they work, we are one team, we race as one. Nico Rosberg was being interviewed, all of this is available on the web, and they asked him about the same question, and he says, no, you never want to see your teammate win the championship, because it makes you look pretty bad. So that's the way it goes sometimes. You know, I do feel Toto's pain, because when you come down after seasons and seasons of very high success, it will hurt so bad, like needles and pins. Final analysis, this season reminds me of the 2007 season. With the right package, Max is going for his first championship, like Lewis was back then. Good thing is, there is no Chinese Grand Prix this year, so hopefully Max's title aspiration will not be stuck in kitty litter. Let's see what the fortune cookie will say at Yas Marina. And Mr. Rogers, I'm trying to verify this through Reuters and AFP. I heard a rumor. Sony Records is establishing a new studio near Suzuka, and Connie Francis is coming to record a new 45. Who's screaming now? And that was Zinger of the Day.
Bravo, 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 bravo. Nas, outstanding. But indeed, El Fernando is still here with us, laughing and giggling. And he'll be there next year again. And trust me, I think he should retire. But we're going to have some Alonso-isms for another year, and it's going to be fun, surfing USA. And I agree with you. Renault, or what, if you want to call them, Alpine. I think that they're eventually going to pull out of Formula One, and this will be their last hurrah, unfortunately, because of the electrification of the world, people hating combustion engines. and Renault, just trying to put Carlos Ghosn behind them, is suffering. Let's just enjoy it while it lasts, but it is and will be a new era in Formula One in the next couple of years.
You know, interesting you say that. This morning I was thinking that if Max wins the championship and another year or two, Lewis does not regain his title, I will not be surprised if Mercedes pulls out, because these big companies, you know, they have the corporate image. If they're not winning, then they lose interest very quickly, especially if there is a, you know, new man at the top and he doesn't like, he likes golf or sailing more than Formula One, then they will bail out. But apparently this new CEO, Ola Källenius, who is Swedish, apparently he is a motorsports fan. So, but they will stay as an engine supplier because they have this, you know, high performance division of Mercedes in Brixworth in England, which used to be Ilmor. So at least we will see them. And I would love to see Audi or Porsche come back. And, you know, Toyota has been around the hybrid technology with at Le Mans. It will be nice to see them. But I would like to see them as engine supplier. I don't want them hiring people from automobile industries and some other industry who don't know any dip caca about racing and put them in charge of Formula One team and then have a engineer or designer not driving, commuting to work, not by highway, but by airways. I mean, that whole thing was just, I mean, as much as I wanted to see them succeed, that thing was just a big exercise in marketing, I think.
And I agree with you. It was a devastating waste of billions of dollars, to be honest with you. But it is what it is, and I am getting swath. I'm sure you're thirsty, so why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Very nice to meet you.
Very nice,
sir. I've known you for
30 years. Yeah,
I remember you from your Le Mans days, you know.
You remember that?
Oh, absolutely.
76.
Oh, from Holland, right?
I'm with F1Weekly.com.
Yeah.
And we couldn't believe you were here.
Very, very nice to see you.
But we were a late entry. It's my car, you know.
You know, we do a F1 Weekly podcast, and we have a few questions for you, please.
Yes, please.
You drove the 917 at Le Mans, right?
Yeah, 1971 with Helmut Marko.
Helmut Marko. And you won that race, right?
And I won that race with a Porsche 917 5-liter, and we still hold a record.
I know.
5,335 kilometers. Yeah, I know it all. 222.3 kilometers average.
How was it driving on the Mulsanne straight, the old fast Mulsanne in that car?
Oh, marvelous, because then we had the rest. But it did 350 kilometers an hour, the short tail one, our car. The long tail was 370, we did 350. But we had one fast flat-out corner, so you have to be very precise steering in the fast corner there. But there was only one corner, it was flat out. But you have to do it exactly, because you go bloody fast.
Exactly.
Are you still in touch with Dr. Helmut Marko?
Not really, no.
Oh, really?
No. He spoke to me when he was 60, and I should have gone there. We, he had a surprise party, but I couldn't come, I couldn't go. So we have not, that is the only thing, you know, you have not so many, I see Jackie X when I drive, I drove the Mille Miglia this year with this car, with my friend Ben Pond, who has the winery here, you know, Bernardus Lodge. He's living over the grate. He has a nice hotel there. And Ben is here, and that's my friend for 45 years. And I raced together with him, and he was my manager, and he was a coach, and he was everything, you know. And and we still know each other. But this car is now, we drove together in the Mille Miglia because the sponsor State of Art allowed us to race this car together. But Ben was driving, and I was sitting beside because we drive about the same, and I like it. And then the sponsor said, do you like to drive it in Monterey, in Carmel? I said, yeah, okay, well, think about it. I haven't raced for 15 years, and I did one race in 91, and then I didn't race after 76, so I'm 64 now, but I thought, yeah, I must do it, you know, I feel good.
Once a race car driver, always a race
driver. Yeah, always, exactly, always a race driver, so I did it.
What part of Holland are you from?
I'm right in the middle. It's about 20 minutes from Amsterdam to the southeast.
Oh, that's wonderful. My wife is born in Den Haag.
Den Haag?
Yeah, I married a Dutch woman.
Oh, you did?
Yes. Okay. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I did.
That's good. Very nice women in Holland.
Well, very nice.
Here too, but Spain, in Holland too, yes, that's right.
You know, one thing that surprises me about two countries in Europe, Holland is one of them, Austria is one of them, you know, not in big size like France or Germany, but they have a tremendous following in Formula One. Why is that?
Well, you can also say Finland.
Absolutely, they produce a few.
They produce, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know. It's so funny that we had, yeah, Jos Verstappen now and...
Jos is like a god in Holland.
Exactly. And Arie Luyendijk, of course, winning Indy 500 twice.
Twice, yeah.
So we had a few good drivers in Holland. And why is that? I couldn't tell you, because it's so difficult to get the money in Holland.
Sure.
Therefore, my Formula One career, I finished sixth twice in the Formula One, in an old one.
Yeah, tell us about your Formula One career.
Yeah, I did only 8 races.
Uh-huh.
Because...
Which team?
First time it was the Surtees in 1971, a week after I won Le Mans.
Wow.
And it was paid by, Zandvoort, the organization.
Sure.
And Esso was a sponsor. But you don't believe it. They pay, I don't know what it is, but it is 25,000 guilders. It's about $12,500, whatever, $14,000. And now you pay a couple of million dollars.
Yeah, it's nothing.
To do a drive. And I was in the wet, in the rain. And I finished 8th.
Wow.
In a TS7, and Surtees was driving a TS9. And Jackie Stewart, Graham Hill, and Denny Holm, three ex-world champions, they were 9th, 10th, and 11th.
What a lineup.
But that was, I tell you, because that was the tires. I was the last one on Firestone, and they drive Goodyear, and the Firestones were better in the rain. But I did the whole race. I mean, there were no mistakes, and I passed Graham Hill, and boom, boom, and then he said it at the night, who is that chap? Because he's never heard of me, of course. You know?
Of course not. That's fantastic.
So that was in 71. Fantastic. And then in 72, I didn't drive. 73, I drove maybe 3 races, 4, I can't remember, for Williams, with Ezo Marlboro, with sponsoring of Marlboro, because I was, of course, the best in Holland at the moment, and Marlboro wanted to, I was in the world championship team for Marlboro, and they paid, and he said, you have to let drive him. For Lennep, and then, okay, Zandvoort, and you have to let them drive another time, because it was 6 overall in Zandvoort when the big fire was, where Roger Williamson was killed.
Oh, yes.
And then I finished 6, but nobody knows, because there was an accident, a deadly accident.
Let me ask
and
you.
And then I did, 2 other, one very bad race in Belgium, and it was 9th in Austria, but frankly, I just didn't want me to. You know, I didn't get the right tires, and it was a load of shit. But anyway, and then they had your end sign.
Sure. More none.
More is none. With Dutch sponsoring, so then they put me in the car again. And I finished 6th at the Nürburgring in 75.
Wow.
And then my sponsor said, you drove badly. It was the first point for Morris Nunn. Then I said, fuck Formula 1.
I said that too.
Oh, yeah?
I said, fuck Formula 1.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. One just last one thing from the Mexico City Grand Prix. Martin Brundle made a very interesting comment. You know, after the race, during the race, Lewis was asking where they were, you know, Red Bull is faster than him. And he said, well, the answer is pretty simple. Just say Mexico, and, you know, they're fast everywhere. So that was interesting. Okay, sir, now we start with MotoGP. 5 pole positions in a row for Ducati rider Francesco Paco Benaya. I don't know how to pronounce his name properly. So apologies to Pecco. This time he went on to take victory at Portimao, this track located in the Algarve region, which is the vacation capital of Portugal. And this is a fantastic track. Johan Mir was second for Suzuki, and Aussie made Jack Miller was third on his Lenovo Ducati. Your fellow Francais and newly crowned world champion Fabio Quartararo crashed out. I think this was his first DNF of the season. Next, get your Kleenex ready, Mr. Rogers. Teardrop in miso soup.
Kazuki Nakajima has announced his retirement. He was supported for many years by a Toyota who brought him a seat at Williams. I'm sure you remember that. And with them, he enjoyed success in World Endurance Championship, winning the championship and Le Mans. And I remember at one time his father, Satoru Nakajima, who was supported by Honda, ironically, and his teammate at one time was Lotus driver Ayrton Senna. But I remember Satoru Nakajima said when Kazuki was racing and his other son was trying to make it in the European scene, Satoru said, if you think Kazuki is fast, wait till you see my second son. And his name is, I think his name is Daisuke Nakajima. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
See, that's how quickly he went. And going back to his colony, another retirement, Anthony Davidson, who has done a very good job both behind the wheel and behind the microphone. I really enjoy his work on, I don't know if he's on BBC or Sky, but he does a very good job. And he has announced that he will also hang up his helmet at the end of the season. Formula One orders Chinese to go. Racing fans around the world will be delighted to know they will get to see advertising covering grandstand seats for the next few years as the contract for the Chinese Grand Prix has been extended. Shanghai is a destination city, but the race is no Peking duck. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
Yeah, the Chinese Grand Prix has provided some historical highs and lows. Nico Rosberg scored his first Grand Prix win here with Mercedes. Michael Schumacher took his 91st and final victory here in 2006. The lows were experienced by a driver in 2007 who was left alone by Lady Luck in the kitty litter with a taste that was championship losing bitter. Despite this, LCH is the most successful driver in Shanghai with 6 wins. I guess at Saturday night dinner, his fortune cookie says, you win now. You know, one thing I will say, there was a graph of races Lewis Hamilton has won. I mean, the guy has won 5 or more wins at a lot of tracks. I mean, it's a very, very impressive graph. Okay, sir, cash is not king. Control is, so says Michael Andretti. Now, the report when Michael Andretti's Sauber deal fell through was that they wanted, you know, $50 million in guarantee each year for the next 4 or 5 years. But he is saying that real issue was that he was not going to have the control he thought he will have if he was to pay 80% of the asking price. So I don't know what happened there, but I'm sure there is more to the story that has come out. Okay, sir, off-tracks excursion. IndyCar star Pato O'Ward was at his home Grand Prix over the weekend because he is from Mexico. And Dr. Marco tells journalist Dieter Rankin of RaceFans.net, that's where I got this news from, that when Pato O'Ward was part of Red Bull, his nickname was Potato. No wonder he was peeled by the world-famous Marco Machetti after just a few races in Formula 2. And then they also put him in the Japanese Super Formula, and nothing much was done, so he was chop-chop. Okay, sir, Miami Beach Roomba. Things are off to a great start for the first F1 race in Florida since 1959. The planned capacity is 80,000 against this 275,000 people pre-registered to buy tickets. Grandstand tickets sold out on the first day, with 1,800 people paying a $5,000 deposit for luxury hospitality. That's very, very impressive. And sir, just a final word on the Mexican Grand Prix, Mexico City Grand Prix. The Circuit Hermanos Rodriguez is located at Magdalena Michuca Park in Mexico City. It was here, at the then very fast Peraltada corner, that 19-year-old Ricardo Rodriguez lost control of his Lotus during practice for the November 1, 1962 Mexico City race. And I believe this was a non-championship Formula One race. And Ricardo died in the arms of his older brother, Pedro. And of course, Pedro himself was killed in 1971 in a sports car race in Germany. So, there we have it, Mr. Rogers. Any final words on the Mexican Grand Prix before we go to Musical Mundial?
Well, all I know is Viva México, los burritos es muy grande y muy bonito y muy hermosito y maravilloso.
And according to Señor Gabriel, who has been to the Mexican Grand Prix, this is a fantastic place. And he had a great time and he's planning on going there. And hopefully, if all goes well, I will have a lot of time on hand next year. So depending on where I am, but my dream right now is at least do all the races in the Americas, the North Americas, you know, the Canadian, two US and the Mexican Grand Prix. And that'll make me very, very happy. And sir, now we come to Musical Mundial. Okay, of course, race took place in Mexico, so we have a song, beautiful song from Mexico, a tune called Besame Mucho, which you are very familiar with. This is the most covered song of Spanish language, and it was written by a lady, Consuelo Velasquez, when she was 16 years old, and she grew up in the same town as Sergio Perez, Guadalajara. This song has been recorded by many people, groups, including Beatles, Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, Placido Domingo, and many more. And for the sake of Mr. Rogers, to keep him happy, we're going to have this version from Dalida in French. So please enjoy, and thank you for listening. Oh, and before we go, Mr. Rogers, who's going to win Brazil?
He's a Dutch guy, and he likes licorice.
Very good, very good.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bésame, bésame mucho. Cette chanson d'autrefois, je la chante pour toi. Bésame, bésame mucho. Comme une histoire d'amour qui ne finirait pas. On l'a chanté dans les rues sous des ciels inconnus et dans toute la France. On la croyait oubliée pour mieux nous aimer, voilà qu'elle recommence. Bésame, bésame mucho. Si dans un autre pays ça veut dire chanter avec quelques mots qui vont sur la musique. Bésame, bésame mucho. Si dans un autre pays ça veut dire embrasse-moi. Bésame, bésame mucho. Toute ma vie je vous chanter avec toi. Bésame, bésame mucho.